The following paid program does not necessarily reflect the views of this station, its staff, or iHeartMedia.
Now it's time for the Hawaiian Eye Show, sponsored by Hawaiian Eye Center, where life has never looked better. This is your weekly informative hour all about eyes. Learn about cataracts. Ask a question about glaucoma. Find out how diabetes affects your eyes. Stay tuned for an entertaining and educational program about eyes and eye care. Call in to have your questions answered by the doctor. Now, your host, Harvard-trained eye surgeon, Dr. Christopher Tortora.
Good morning, everyone. It's time once again for our regular weekly program about eyes and eye care. It's called the Hawaiian Eye Show, and it's sponsored by Hawaiian Eye Center, where life has never looked better. We're going to be here for the next hour talking about glasses and bifocals, about laser beams and eye surgery. We can talk about your cataracts or your contacts, itchy eyes, droopy lids, or whatever it is that interests you. If you'd like to join in today, give us a call. Our number here, 521-8383. We'd love to hear about your experiences and answer your questions. If you can't call in today, or maybe you're feeling a little shy, you can always email your questions to us. Our email address is eyes@hawaiianeye.com, and we can answer those questions over the air. Look us up on the web while you're online at hawaiianeye.com. Follow me on Twitter. Go to twitter.com and look for Dr. Tortora or Hawaii Eye Center, Hawaiian Eye Center. And find us on Facebook at Hawaiian Eye Center as well. During the next hour, we'll discuss eye news from around the country and around the world. Sometimes we'll do an eye quiz to test your IQ. We'll have a lot of fun today. Remember, all opinions expressed on this program are those of myself and the other medical doctors of the Hawaiian Eye Center. I'm an ophthalmologist, or IMD, which means I'm a medical doctor specializing in the eyes. Now, we're going to try to be very consumer-oriented today, make an effort to give you the best possible practical advice. But remember, I can't see through the telephone, so I may have to recommend an examination before I can tell you exactly what's going on in your eyes. Hawaiian Eye Center does sponsor our program today as a public service, so sit back, relax, and enjoy an hour all about eyes. Well, you know, there's a lot of questions that I get from patients as I'm sitting talking to them in the office. And usually we try to educate patients about their conditions, what's happening in their eyes, what they can do to improve things, what's dangerous, what's not dangerous. And a lot of times we get questions about things that people are worried about. And as physicians, we can't always tell what you, the patient, what your biggest concern is. But one of the things about dealing with eyes is that a lot of times people are worried about, are they going to lose their vision? Am I going to go blind from this condition? Is this condition going to make my vision bad? So a big concern, am I going to go blind? And a lot of times we, even as eye specialists, you know, don't answer that question for you because you don't ask it. And someone comes in with some kind of an eye condition, which to me is a minor condition because I see it, you know, 20 times a day. But to them, it's something new. It's different. It's scary. And the question, am I going to go blind, is in the back of their mind. So I think, you know, what I've learned over the years is that sometimes when people express more concern over a particular set of symptoms than I think is warranted by how much it bothers them, I'm always concerned that there's some other concern or other motivation that they have that's making them ask questions about it or making them concerned about it. So I always try to tell people, you know, this is not a dangerous condition. It can be bothersome, but it's not dangerous. But also it's incumbent on you, the patient, when you're sitting in front of the doctor, whatever it is, whether it's your eyes or whether it's your heart or any other part of your body, you may be concerned, is this a life-threatening problem? Is this a vision-threatening problem? Is this something that I could lose function of some part of my body because of? And if you don't know, then you need to come out and ask these types of questions because the doctor can't anticipate that you have certain specific concerns. You know, we learn to be a little bit intuitive over time because we understand the types of concerns and worries that people have, but most doctors are very busy. They have to see a lot of patients in a short period of time, and their concerns are to make sure that things are okay from their standpoint. Not necessarily from your standpoint. You may be concerned about something and the doctor may not realize that you're concerned because he's not concerned. And he says, you know, this is a minor problem to himself, but he doesn't say that to you. And so you go leave the office not reassured about your future, about what's going to happen. So ask questions. You know, I would like to encourage people, the patients out there, to try to know what their agenda is, to try to know what kinds of questions they have. And when you go into a doctor's office, there are certain questions that you have, and not all of them always get answered just because the doctor may have a different agenda than you do, or may have a different way of thinking about things than you do. And so if you're worried, am I going to go blind with this eye condition? If you're worried, is my heart going to stop with this heart condition? Or what it is, am I going to die from this pneumonia? You need to ask your doctor, and you need to say, you know, how dangerous is this? Or, you know, am I going to lose function of this organ? Am I likely to die from this? And people don't like to ask these types of questions, but if you don't ask them, they're probably not going to get answered. But people also ask questions that to us as professionals seem very, odd questions, because to us, things are very different. We're very well educated about the particular stuff that we're doing, that we're talking about, that we're dealing with every day. And so when it comes to the eyes, for example, I've had a lot of experience dealing with eyes. I've had a lot of education with eyes. Most of the stuff that comes into the office, I have a pretty good understanding of what it is, what it's, how it's likely to be, to respond to treatment and so forth. Sometimes people are less sophisticated about their particular problem. And one of the questions that actually comes up a fair amount that always surprises me a little bit when it does, but obviously it's a question that's out there, is they say, well, what's the difference between cataract and glaucoma? And the reason that kind of surprises me is because cataract and glaucoma are two very different conditions. You know, it's sort of like asking, you know, what's the difference between a heart attack and an ingrown toenail? It's just very different kinds of conditions. Cataract is something that's very easily treatable. That's something that can lead to loss of vision, but it's reversible loss of vision. Glaucoma is something that can damage the vision and cause permanent blindness without people even realizing that they have a problem. So we'll talk a little bit about this. We'll talk a little bit about cataract and glaucoma and what's what and what's the difference. But the interesting point that I'm trying to make is that as a physician, we don't always know what your agenda is, you, the patient. And so we may be sailing right along saying, okay, I think I answered all the questions, and I think I, you know, gave this person the information that they need and so forth. And you, as the patient, may be sitting there saying, gee, you know, the doctor didn't answer my biggest question, which was A, B, or C. And so, so think about it. Make a little list if you need to before you walk into the office, so you don't forget. By the time you get through all the testing and all of the things that you need to do get ready to see the doctor, then the doctor sees you and chats with you, and it's only a couple of minutes because he's dashing off to the next patient or she's dashing off to the next patient. Make sure you know or remember what it was that was your big concern that you want to ask about, and then make sure that that they do answer that question for you. And that way you will leave the office feeling a lot better and more comfortable than if you just said, I guess since he didn't seem too concerned, I guess everything's okay, but I don't really know. I still have this nagging worry or concern in the back of my mind. So that as long as you ask the question and get the answer, then you won't have to have that nagging worry or question in the back of your eye. Now, maybe good news, may not be good news, but at least then you know. And as they say, forewarned is forearmed. So knowing, then you can deal with it. Not knowing, then you just worry about it. We're going to take a short break. When we get back, we'll talk a little bit about the differences between cataract and glaucoma, what each one does, how each one is treated, and we'll be right back.
If you need the personal attention of Dr. Tortora or one of the other doctors of the Hawaiian Eye Center, where life has never looked better, visit their offices in Central Oahu and in Hilo on the Big Island. Call for your appointment. The number on Oahu is 733-2020. That spells C-2020. From the neighbor islands, call toll-free 1-888-621-2020.
When you have a cataract, your vision gets gradually worse over time. You don't see as well.
Having the corrective surgery and now having the vision of a much younger man, I can see again.
Our state-of-the-art surgery center offers safety and convenience without a hospital stay. Visit our website and learn what's involved in a cataract procedure. You'll be surprised how easy it can be.
Take a virtual tour of a cataract procedure at their website, HawaiianEye.com. To make an appointment, call Hawaiian Eye Center at C2020. That's 733-2020. Or from the neighbor islands, call 888-621-2020.
Hi, I'm Dr. Christopher Tortora, Medical Director of the Hawaiian Eye Center. My colleague, Dr. Stephen Rhee, and I enjoy helping people see better.
Sometimes we're keeping people from seeing worse.
Patients ask me, how do I know if I have glaucoma? Unfortunately, you don't. Most glaucoma is only detected with a complete eye examination.
So, if you have cataract, glaucoma, diabetes, or just want new eyeglasses, call us today.
Find us online at HawaiianEye.com or call 733-2020. That spells C-2020.
The Hawaiian Eye Show phone lines are now open. Give us a call at 521-8383 with your questions for the doctor. If you're calling from the neighbor islands, call us toll-free at 888-565-8383. Now, back to your host, Harvard-trained eye surgeon, Dr. Christopher Tortora.
Doctor, my eyes, tell me what is wrong, was I unwise?
This is Dr. Christopher Tortora. You're listening to the Hawaiian Eye Show, sponsored by Hawaiian Eye Center, where life has never looked better. We're talking about eyes, and we've been talking a little bit this morning about some of the questions people ask or don't ask when they come in the office. And I encourage people to ask questions about whatever it is that they have concerns about so that they leave the office feeling comfortable, both physically and mentally, about what it is that's going on. Have your concerns answered? Is it a valid concern? Is it just nothing that your concern is greater than it should be? I did say that a lot of people ask a question about, you know, what's the difference between cataracts and glaucoma, and although they're very different conditions, the reason I think that people ask about the difference between them is because they are the two most commonly known eye conditions affecting the eyes, and they both have names that don't really describe what they are. And the reason, actually, that they have names that don't really describe what they are is that their names are derived from Greece, from Greek, ancient Greece, and from the Greek physicians in the ancient Greek times, who used to look at the eyes of their patients, and they only knew pretty much two conditions. They knew cataract and they knew glaucoma, two very different conditions, but in the two cases, the eyes looked different. And in the cataract eye, the eye looked white, or the center of the eye, the pupil, looked white like a cataract, like a waterfall. A cataract is a waterfall. And so the white of a waterfall was a cataract, and the glaucoma was named for the blue of the ocean. So if the eye looked blue like the ocean, it was glaucoma, and the patient couldn't see. So the patient couldn't see, they came in, the eye was blue like the ocean, that was called glaucoma. The eye was white like the waterfall, that was called cataract. So what's the difference? Well, a cataract is actually something blocking your vision, and so a cataract can be removed. When the blockage is removed, then the vision improves. So what's blocking the vision? Well, the cataract is actually a natural aging process in the lens inside our eye. The lens in the eye allows us to focus light from distance to near. Works pretty well for the first 40 years of life, and then stops working as well as we find that our reading vision starts to go down the tubes. Our distance vision may be good, but our reading vision starts to deteriorate starting in the early 40s and continuing getting worse as time goes on. So as the near vision starts to fail because of the loss of flexibility of the lens is continuing to go through changes, and those changes cause the lens to become darker and more opaque as time goes on. And for most people, sometime in their 60s, 70s, or 80s, for some people younger, for some people rarely older, the lens becomes cloudy enough that it interferes with the vision. Now, that can happen very slowly over time, so people barely notice it. It can happen over a relatively short period of time, so people notice a significant change in the vision over a relatively short time period of a few months. Or it could become really bad over a period of time so that you see very little at all. But the pathology, the pathophysiology, the thing that's causing the problem is a cloudy lens that's blocking light getting into your eye. So you can't see because the light is being blocked getting into your eye. So like if you had a really dark glass in front of your eye, you wouldn't see so well. But when you took that glass away, you can see okay. So the same thing with a cataract. That cataract is like a dark shade or dark object blocking your vision. And when that object is removed, then you see well again. So cataracts are treatable. They're fixable. It involves a surgical procedure to remove that cloudy lens. We generally like to replace it with a clear lens implant so that you can see better afterwards without having to wear really, really thick glasses. You may still need to wear glasses, but maybe not really, really thick. And so the cataract is removed through a surgical procedure to get rid of that that obstruction that's blocking your vision. Now, glaucoma is a very different process. Glaucoma is not any kind of a blockage or an obstruction. It's not any kind of a reversible problem. It's actually a degeneration or a damage to some of the structures in the eye that allow you to see. So, for example, in order to be able to see, the retina, the seeing tissue in the back of the eye, needs to work properly. And then the image from that retina needs to be carried back to the brain so that it can be interpreted. If the nerve, which is what carries the vision from the eye to the brain, is not functioning properly or is weak, then the image is not going to get to the brain properly, or parts of the image won't get to the brain properly. And so what happens in glaucoma is that the nerve is damaged in the back of the eye. The nerve is gradually, progressively damaged over time. And glaucoma, again, is a progressive disease. It starts with very little effect on the vision and gradually causes more and more effect on the vision. The reason it's different, very different from cataract, is that the vision loss that occurs from glaucoma, number one, is not usually noticeable at first, whereas cataract, it blurs your vision. You can tell your vision's not that clear. And number two, a cataract can be reversed. Remember I said it's a cloudiness. You remove it surgically, a cloudy lens, remove that cloudy lens, and people see better. In the case of glaucoma, because it means that the structures in the eye are actually degenerating, are actually weakening or degrading over time, you can't fix that. I mean, you can't bring back that lost function. So when vision is lost from glaucoma, people can't get that vision back again. It's gone for good. So when you have glaucoma and you don't see the early changes in the vision, and as those vision changes get worse, and as you lose vision from glaucoma and start to notice it, it's already so late in the disease process that it's very difficult to do anything about it other than try to keep it from getting worse. And there's nothing really can be done to improve things. So the key to glaucoma is to catch it early before it causes serious vision loss, before it causes serious changes in the vision. And because you can't see those changes in the vision until they become very advanced, because those changes start way out in your peripheral vision, in the side vision where you don't notice them, it's very important to be screened or tested for glaucoma. How do we test people for glaucoma? Well, glaucoma is one part of what we look for when we do a complete eye examination. We do a full examination of the eyes where we measure the pressure in the eye. Sometimes in glaucoma, the eye pressure is elevated, but not always. We look at the optic nerve. In glaucoma, the optic nerve shows evidence of damage, and that's the most sensitive way to find it, to look at the optic nerve and see whether it shows some kind of evidence of change or potential damage over time. And if you see changes that look like they could be a result of glaucoma, then we need to do more evaluation to find out if, in fact, you are likely to have glaucoma. We can evaluate the health of the eye by looking at it, by taking pictures of it, by scanning it with a special imaging instrument. We can test the function of the nerve by having you do a test called the visual field or peripheral vision test. You look in a big sort of a bowl, big huge bowl of lead that's lit, and then there's little lights that are that are lit in your peripheral vision. And as you see those lights, you push a little button that tells us that you see it. And then nowadays a computer tracks your responses. And it used to be that a human being tracked your responses, but for the past 20 years or so, it's 25 years, it's been a machine that tracks your responses and gives us a plotting or a printout of how your peripheral vision looks. So it's important to be tested or be screened for glaucoma, particularly if you have risk factors for glaucoma. And there's some people who are at high risk for glaucoma and other people who you know, really are at relatively low risk for glaucoma. So what's a high-risk person look like? How would you know if you might have glaucoma? Well, one way is related to age. So people who have glaucoma tend to be older. So if you're over 50, your risk of glaucoma is a little bit higher. If you're over 70, your risk is probably about twice as high as it is being over 50. So as you get older, you should be having eye checkups on a regular basis. Over 50, maybe once every 2 years. Over 60, once a year. Make sure that the eyes are okay and that there's no evidence of glaucoma. If there is a suggestion of something that might be glaucoma, the doctor may ask you to come back more frequently. So regular screening examinations for people who are normal every year, over age 60, every year if you're diabetic, every 2 years or so over age 50, and every 3 or so years, you know, prior to that. The screening test for glaucoma is fairly simple. It's part of a complete eye examination, and we check for everything else as well to make sure that the overall health of the eye is okay, and probably even, you know, do a little testing to see if you need glasses or if glasses would help you as well. So we can sort of do everything at once. If it turns out that you have glaucoma, so if that usually the way we treat it is we try to lower the pressure in the eye. The damage to the nerve that occurs in glaucoma, the damage to the nerve inside the eye, seems to be improved, or it seems like there's less pressure, less damage, if we can lower the pressure inside the eye. So initially, glaucoma was thought to be a problem where pressure inside the eye caused damage to the nerve. And in many cases, it still is the case that pressure is elevated in the eye and that causes damage to the nerve. But there are many, many cases of glaucoma also where the pressure is in the normal range. So just measuring the pressure is not a good screening test for glaucoma. But if the pressure is normal or the pressure is abnormal, the treatment for glaucoma is the same. Basically, we want to lower the pressure in the eye. So whatever it is today, we want to get it lower. And so we do that with either eye drops, and drops can be as infrequent as once a day or as frequent as 3 or 4 times a day. You can use as few as 1 drop a day for one type of drop, as many as 4 different types of drops a day in the course of a day. Or you can have, in some cases, a laser treatment is helpful for glaucoma, and laser may take the place of a drop so that you don't have to use a drop every day. So for some people, we recommend the laser instead of drops because it'll be easier for them long-term to manage things with just having a one-time laser treatment versus having to use drops every day in and day out. Don't forget, without fail, use those drops. So several ways to treat glaucoma in the early stages. As it becomes more advanced, or if there are new problems related to the glaucoma, then you need to then we need to maybe do some different types of treatments, add different medications, in some cases do surgery. But it usually can be controlled, and that's the goal of glaucoma, is to control it to keep the vision from getting worse. Because remember I said glaucoma causes irreversible damage to the eye and to the vision. So damage that occurs to your vision from glaucoma is not going to be reversed. Damage that occurs to your eye from cataract or loss of vision related to cataract can be reversed by removing the cloudy cataract. Okay. All right, so a little bit about the difference between cataract and glaucoma. Technology for removing cataracts has made great advances, so that's something that you should be aware of. If you have a cataract, having it removed now can be not only improving the vision to have it removed, but also reducing your dependence on eyeglasses. We offer people vision correction at the time of cataract surgery in many cases now. So that's all very interesting, and it's great how technology evolves and progresses and allows us to offer people more options and choices as time goes on. We're a call-in radio program here. This is the Hawaiian Eye Show. And so if you have a question, you can give us a call, and we're happy to try to answer your question. So the phone number here is 521-8383. If you're calling from the neighbor islands, it's 1-888-565-8383. And we're happy to try to answer your questions and take your calls. And we're going to do that as soon as we get back from this short break.
Attention of Dr. Tortora or one of the other doctors of the Hawaiian Eye Center, where life has never looked better, visit their offices in central Oahu and in Hilo on the Big Island. Call for your appointment. The number on Oahu is 733-2020. That spells C-2020. From the neighbor islands, call toll-free 1-888-621-2020.
Our 2015 iHeartRadio Music Festival. Live in Las Vegas. September 18th and 19th. The biggest names in music.
iHeart, are you ready?
Two nights that'll blow you away. Want to go? Text this word right now.
Blackjack. B-L-A-C-K-J-A-C-K. Blackjack.
Text that word right now to 45495 to sign up for our iHeartRadio Music Festival contest. Receive a confirmation text and get texts about iHeartRadio. Standard data and message rates apply.
Hawaiian Eye Center offers you complete eye care for the entire family. Now, cataract patients can reduce or eliminate their dependence on eyeglasses with premium cataract care in as little as 15 minutes. Advanced technology lenses are designed to provide good vision for distance, near and in between, with less dependence on eyeglasses. When cataracts blur vision, a short, painless procedure helps. If you have a cataract and want back youthful vision, call Hawaiian Eye Center at 733-2020 or visit hawaiianeye.com.
The phone lines are now open at 521-8383. On the neighbor islands, it's a free call, 1-888-565-8383. And now, here's Dr. Christopher Tortora.
Can you see me now? Hawaiian eyes, can you see me lost from paradise?
This is Dr. Christopher Tortora. We're talking about eyes. If you have a question about eyes, go ahead and give us a call. 521-8383 will get you to us here in the studio if you're listening on a Saturday morning. We do this program live every Saturday morning, and we do it live so that you have the opportunity to call us with your questions. So if there's something about your eyes or someone you know, a neighbor's eyes or a friend's eyes that you're concerned about, go ahead and give us a call, 521-8383. We'll get you here to the radio studio. We've got some news stories here. I have a story here that says, fears of potentially blinding complications from Avastin eye injections are overblown, according to a new study. So Avastin is a drug, is a medicine that actually is injected into the eye to treat certain forms of conditions inside the eye. Certain forms of diabetic eye disease can be treated with Avastin. Certain forms of macular degeneration can be treated, and the injections are actually inside the eye. And so by giving these injections inside the eye, doctors were concerned that there was a risk that infection could develop inside the eye, which is a very serious problem or complication of any type of surgical treatment or any type of treatment to the eye. And so it turns out that there is a risk of these types of complications, but it's lower than what some people had thought. So I have the article here. It says here, eye injections of the drug Avastin used to treat retinal diseases bring no greater risk of endophthalmitis, a potentially blinding eye infection, than injections with a much more expensive drug, Lucentis, made by the same company, according to new research from the Perelman School of Medicine at the University of Pennsylvania. Their findings are published in the Journal of the American Medical Association in Ophthalmology. The study, based on insurance claims data from across the United States, was conducted in response to reports that Avastin, which is a brand name, or the generic name is bevacizumab, related endophthalmitis, which led the FDA recently to propose significant restrictions on the use of the drug for eye conditions. Our analysis of national data sets shows that the risk for endophthalmitis is no higher with Avastin, and hints that it may actually be a lower risk compared to Lucentis. So the proposed FDA restrictions for Avastin might have the unintended consequences of increasing the infection risk for patients, according to the author of this study. Dr. Van Der Beek and his colleagues' findings come after years of tension between doctors and the maker of the Avastin, because the maker sells a much more expensive drug for eye use, and so they object to doctors using the cheaper drug for the same benefit. So it says, Avastin bevacizumab is an injectable solution of monoclonal antibodies targeted at the blood vessel growth factor, VEGF. It was the first drug designed to inhibit new vessel growth and was approved by the FDA in 2004 for treating colorectal cancers, which typically boost blood vessel formation to keep themselves well supplied with oxygen and nutrients. Common age and diabetes-related retinal diseases, such as wet macular degeneration, also result in part from VEGF driven processes. So ophthalmologists soon began to use Avastin as an off-label use to treat these conditions. Avastin, as distributed for cancer treatment, is frequently repackaged by compounding pharmacies into smaller doses suitable for use in the eyes, which drives the course of the cost of the medication down to about $50 per eye injection. Genentech, the drug's maker, has also developed a similar eye-specific angiogenesis-inhibiting anti-VEGF monoclonal antibody called Lucentis, or ranibizumab. It was FDA approved in 2006 and cost as much as $2,000 per dose. Okay, remember $2,000 compared to what? $50 per dose, right? Okay, no wonder why the drug company is upset. Even though it is closely related to Avastin antibody and multiple clinical trials have found the two drugs have virtually the same effectiveness, to promote the use of the more expensive Lucentis, Genentech announced in 2007 that it would block Avastin's ophthalmic use by prohibiting its sales to compounding pharmacies, but the company backed away from the plan after strong protests from eye doctors. Then in 2012, a few reports in the media noted endophthalmitis, or eye infection outbreaks following repackaged Avastin injections. Endophthalmitis is a bacterial infection in the eye, and the most serious complication of this type of treatment can lead to blindness or even loss of the eye in rare cases. The endophthalmitis outbreaks were limited to specific compounding pharmacies amid a general concern over potential substandard practices at compounding pharmacies nationally. The FDA announced in February of this year that it planned to restrict the ophthalmic use of Avastin to the 5-day period following the packaging of the drug by a compound pharmacy. This would effectively prevent most ophthalmic use of Avastin, according to Dr. Vanderbeek. Compounding pharmacies require 14 days after repackaging just for sterility testing, and without this critical step, ophthalmologists will lack confidence in the safety of the repackaged Avastin and may be unlikely to use it. To get a better picture of Avastin's true endophthalmitis risk, Dr. Vanderbeek and his colleagues looked at the medical claims database for a large American insurance company covering the years 2005 through 2012. The data they reviewed contained no information identifying patients. Analyzing over 290,000 injections of Avastin and 87,000 injections of Lucentis that met their inclusion criteria, the University of Pennsylvania researchers found that 49 and 22 cases, respectively, of endophthalmitis. So the rate of the complication was very low for Avastin, 0.017%, and still low but slightly higher for Lucentis at 0.025%. The 35% lower rate seen in Avastin wasn't statistically significant, but the authors say the data at least suggests that on a nationwide basis, Avastin repackaged by compounding pharmacies doesn't involve the greater risk for endophthalmitis that Lucentis does being packaged by its manufacturer. So this is interesting, and again, it's one of those situations where the pharmaceutical company is trying to fight for its interests, and the physicians and others are trying to fight for the interests of patients. And in this case, it's related to cost, right? Because the drug packaged by the pharmaceutical company could be as much as $2,000 per dose, and the drug packaged by a compounding pharmacy, maybe about $50 a dose. And so that's a huge difference if you think about the thousands of people who need this type of treatment every day across the country. This amounts to a huge amount of money, a difference. And so the pharmaceutical company would like to see that money, but the health insurance and health cost systems would prefer not to see that huge amount of money going into the pockets of the pharmaceutical company and presumably its shareholders. So interesting controversy. As more data comes out, it appears that this cheaper drug is just as safe and as effective, yet the pharmaceutical company continues to try to promote its more expensive counterpart, presumably for their for the interests of their bottom line. The important thing, I think, is to make sure that there are studies that can be done that are impartial, that are not funded, let's say, by drug companies, or not funded by someone who has a vested interest or who can benefit from the results going a certain way, and to have independent types of research. And the trouble in this country, there is a fair amount of research that's funded by the government and by independent agencies, but much of the research that goes on into medical treatments of various types is funded by the pharmaceutical companies. And that's just kind of a fact of life because no one else really has the money. I mean, the taxpayers are busy spending money on bridges and roads and Medicare and other types of things. And so they don't want to spend more money. And so where does the money come to from to fund the research for these types of things? Well, it comes from private money, private companies. So companies that stand to benefit from the results of the research. So we have to always make sure that the research being done is not being biased by the profit motive of whoever stands to benefit from it. Okay, let's see here. We have an article here about electronic health records, and this is a subject that's close to my heart because we've spent over the past year, we've spent quite a bit of time and energy upgrading our systems to be able to take advantage of electronic health records versus what used to be records on paper. And by doing this, there are some advantages that we've gained, like the portability of the records, being able to send the records from one place to another much more easily because it's in electronic format versus on paper. But we've also run into difficulties like the computer in order to try to save us time because it's inherently more time consuming to document everything on a computer than it is to make a few notes on a piece of paper, that the computer sort of makes certain assumptions about what we want to document. And sometimes when that happens, information that's not entirely accurate gets documented into the medical record, or information that is not always relevant gets documented into the medical record because the computer is kind of filling in old information or assuming certain things about how you want the direction of the information to go. So an article here is about, it says, most physicians have trouble or having trouble with their EHR. So it says, if there was ever a love affair between physicians and electronic health records, it is definitely over. Just 34% of physicians said they were satisfied or very satisfied with their electronic health record system in 2014. Now that's down from 62% who are satisfied with their system in 2010, according to a new survey from American EHR Partners, an online research for buying and using technology, and the American Medical Association. Meanwhile, the percentage of physicians unhappy with their system stood at 54% in the year 2014. Now, I can probably give you some insights into why 2010 and 2014 had such different numbers. And I think a lot of it probably has to do with who was using the electronic health records at each of those time frames. In 2010, I think the people who really were interested in technology, early adopters of technology, and really wanted to get their health records done electronically were the ones who were using it. So they were much more likely to be happy and satisfied with their systems. Now, as the government has put more pressure on medical practices to use electronic health records and has actually started to penalize us as medical practices and as hospitals if we don't utilize electronic health records, the number of people who are adopting them is becoming greater, and the people who are adopting them who are not so technology friendly, let's say, or who are somewhat technology averse, is becoming greater. And so the expectation would be, and I think this is perfectly reasonable, expectation would be that the people who are using electronic health records now are perhaps not as happy with them as the people who are using them in 2010, because there are more people who have felt kind of pushed into it versus having adopted it because they really felt that it was the thing to do. And so now we have a greater selection of the types of electronic health records that are available to us, but because there is a greater push to actually adopt them in our practices, and there are penalties if we don't by the government and by Medicare, then that means that we have to make a choice between the different products that are out there. And even though there's some better products and some products that aren't as good, a lot of doctors may be rushing into making these decisions and looking at cost and so forth rather than, you know, how much they like the product. And this may throw off the likability of the health records product. So as for my personal experience, you know, the electronic health records has taken a long time to get used to. I feel much more used to it now, but we've had to change some of the ways that we do things in our office. We've had to change the way we allocate some of our staff. Some things take longer than they used to, and so we have to have more staff. So it actually costs us more money. We have to maintain the system. We have to make sure we have connectivity to the internet all the time to be able to access our records on the cloud and in between our various offices. And all of these things actually do create some significant hassles. Over time, I am realizing there are some benefits as well. Communicating with other physicians is significantly easier. You can send the contents of your whole examination to another doctor with the click of a button. And that's helpful for when we're referring patients back and forth or when we're looking for consultations or trying to get more information about patients who have come to us for the first time. And so this can be very helpful. So I can see the benefits, but I also see the frustration. And certainly we have encountered frustration. And for something that might take just a few minutes to write on a note, I have to go turn on my computer, get into the system, enter my passwords, get the patient's file, and it's a big issue. So hopefully, as we get used to it, it becomes easier. But electronic health records are probably here to stay. I'm sure they are. Everything is getting computerized nowadays. That's good and bad. Can steal your identity and your health records if people are hackers, but hopefully we find ways to keep it secure. All right, well, we're going to take a little break. When we get back, we'll talk about some more eye news. And if you have a question, give us a call. 521-8383 is the number to call, and we're happy to try to answer your questions. We'll be right back.
If you need the personal attention of Dr. Tortora or one of the other doctors of the Hawaiian Eye Center, where life has never looked better, visit their offices in Central Oahu and in Hilo on the Big Island. Call for your appointment. The number on Oahu is 733-2020. That spells C-2020. From the neighbor islands, call toll-free 1-888-621-2020.
With the latest technology, cataract care is often a fast, painless procedure with a rapid return to normal vision and normal activities.
It doesn't hurt. It just takes, 15, 20 minutes the most, and you're out. That's it.
We strive to make your procedure safe and painless. Visit our website and learn what's involved in a cataract procedure. You'll be surprised how easy it can be.
Take a virtual tour of a cataract procedure at their website, hawaiianeye.com. To make an appointment, call Hawaiian Eye Center at C-2020. That's 733-2020. Or from the neighbor islands, call 888-621-2020.
The phone lines are open at 521-8383. And from the neighbor islands, 1-888-565-8383. Now, back to Dr. Christopher Tortora, our host of the Hawaiian Eye Show.
A brown-eyed girl.
This is Dr. Christopher Tortora. Welcome back. You're listening to the Hawaiian Eye Show. We're talking about eyes. And if you have a question about eyes, you have about 6 or 7 minutes to reach us here. 521-8383 is the number to call. If you're just listening and having a good time and you want to continue to listen, you can check out our podcasts. Go to the website, hawaiianeye.com, and click on the Hawaiian Eye Show, the top of the page, and then click on subscribe to a podcast, and then you can hear the shows on your timing rather than when we're broadcasting them live. And if you want to listen to old programs, you can do that there. There's also a wealth of knowledge or information about a lot of different eye conditions right there on the website, hawaiianeye.com. You can also find out about some interesting things that are going on, current events and things that Hawaiian Eye Center and its staff are participating in by going to facebook.com and looking for Hawaiian Eye Center. Go ahead and like us on Facebook if you're headed there, and you can get access to some more information as a result. I also tweet from time to time, so check me out on Twitter at Dr. Tortora. We also, you can find us on Instagram and on Pinterest and various other social media. All right, so we're going to go to the phones here. We've got Chris standing by on Kauai. Hi, Chris. Welcome to the program. You're on the air.
Aloha, Christopher. Nice to hear you. Yes, being a listener, I have a couple questions. Now, would you be willing to tell me what is the latest glasses lenses made of?
Glasses lenses, like if you know, glasses that you wear on your face, right? They're made of a number of different materials. You can get glass ones, but most people don't do that anymore because they're so heavy. You can get ones made of polycarbonate, which is a shatter-resistant material that's recommended for sports and for kids and people who need to protect their eyes. But most of them are made out of a polymer material or a type of a plastic that is able to be ground into the shape of different types of lenses. And I can't tell you exactly what that material is called. There are several different ones, but it is a plastic-type material.
Okay, excellent. Now, on this new plastic type of material, it appears that the ones that I've seen that I've been looking at has a shiny finish. You know, like a photograph, you can get a shiny, you get a glossy, or you can get a matted. And most of them appear to be glossy. Did you know that?
So there are different kinds of coatings that you can get put on the lenses. So if you have a lens without a coating on it, there are reflections that come off of it. It depends on what's called the refractive index of the lens, which has to do with how thick the lens is in terms of how strong it is. So for people who have very high prescriptions, they often want a high index lens, which means it's thinner for the amount of correction that it gives you. And so depending on the index of the glass or the material and what the material is made from, the reflections off the material may be different. So not everyone is shiny, but some of them are. In order to reduce that, most of the time the opticians will recommend an anti-reflective coating, which mutes some of those reflections, both for you and for people looking at your eyes or your glasses.
Okay, anti-reflective coating.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, excellent. Another question, what is the difference between the bifocal versus a transition or a progressive?
Okay, well, so a bifocal lens is the lens that gives you correction both for distance and for near. Most of us who are over 40, 45 usually want some type of multifocal lens, whether it's a bifocal with distance and near, a trifocal with distance, middle, and near. Or a progressive lens, which is distance, middle, and near, but has no lines in the middle. So a bifocal has a line across the middle that separates the distance part of the glass from the reading part, and the progressive lens has no line. It gives you a steady change in the vision from distance correction in the top part of the lens to reading correction in the bottom part of the lens. Now, transitions is a different thing. That's a darkening agent that is light sensitive, and that's a part of the glass, and it causes the glasses to get dark when you go outdoors into bright sunlight or wherever the UV light is greater.
Yes, of course. Thank you. I know what you mean. I appreciate that. Okay. Now, as far as a person's vision, if you had a bifocal lens and your distant vision was fine, but your close point reading, your close point needed to be for the average, you know, sitting at your desk or working with your paperwork, not reading a book specifically, but you know, the distance between yourself and your paperwork at about 18 inches to 2 feet. I'm finding that the prescription that I got, It's not clear. It's blurry. It's not clear.
Can I ask you how old you are first? Because it does depend a little bit on your age, what your eyes will do for you.
Sure, 70.
Okay.
And so I find that with this prescription, I have to bring the book, or I have to take my face closer to what I'm trying to see.
So what happens as you get older, and so your lens basically at the age of 70 is not flexible at all. So you really don't have any range of focus in your eyes themselves. So whatever your eyes are focused to with the glasses is what you're going to see clearly. If that's distance, say for driving or for watching TV, then you're going to see those things clearly, but anything else closer to you is not going to be clear. If it's reading vision that's clear, so say most people like to read about 16 inches away from them, then that reading vision is going to be clear, but something that's 18 or 20 inches away is not going to be as clear. So the best approximation of trying to restore your range of focus is to have a progressive lens, the no-line bifocal that we talked about, where it has distance correction through the top, reading correction through the bottom, and the mid-range has a whole range of correction that gives you everything sort of in between. Now, the good side of that is that there is a point in the glasses where everything would be in focus. So if you look through the correct part of the lens, you're going to see things in focus at whatever distance you're looking at them. The downside is that you have to figure out how to look through exactly the right part of the lens in order to get that into focus. And sometimes that's very easy and intuitive. Some people have difficulty with that. So if you are trying to get a range of focus and you have a bifocal, for example, you're not going to get it because you're going to have just distance and near. But if you have a multifocal or progressive lens, then there's a good chance that some part of the lens will focus whatever you're looking at. You just need to figure out how to get that in a position where you can see it clearly in relation to how your glasses work.
It tends to be more a movement of your head rather than your eyes.
Yeah, that's probably a lot of it. Do you have
what they call it? Is that what? Well, I was, introduced to it, and we tried a pair, but I didn't care for them because. In the brochure, it says it indicates that you can see clearly in all directions, moving your eyes, and it all points of vision. But when I actually tried them on, it was like that wasn't the case. And they said, "Well, you have to find the sweet spot." Well, what's the sweet spot? So it appears that means you have to move your head, not your eyes so much, but you have to move your head to find those focal points. Otherwise, you can be out of focus.
Yeah, you're right. And I don't have a whole lot of time because I have to wind up the program in a minute. But but what I will tell you is that the fit of the glasses to your face can be important as well. And one of the things that sometimes happens is that people get a pair of progressive lenses and they aren't quite looking through the right part of the lens when they're doing what they want to do. And so they're not taking advantage of that sweet spot. So what you want to do is make sure that the optician goes, and if you are having trouble, that the optician actually marks up the lens and determines where the actual center of the focus is, where the reading portion is, and that you're actually looking through those parts of the lens as you move your head. Because a lot of times we choose frames for style, not for function, and the frames can be important for function as well, how deep the frame is, how it fits our face, how close to or far away from the eyes it puts your lenses. And those things can be important in a good fit. So you need to find an optician who knows what he or she is doing and can try to find a frame that works well for you as well as the lens that works well for you. And it can be a little tricky. All right, so thanks for your call. I wish I had more time, but maybe we'll catch you another week.
Well, thank you so much.
Aloha. So it's been an hour already talking about eyes and eye care, and I've had a lot of fun, and I hope you have too. And thanks. If you would like to let your friends know about us, we'd love it if they would listen as well. I'd like to thank Christy for helping out here in the studio, and thanks to all you listeners for making the show work through your calls and through your email. If you learn something new, be sure to listen again next week. Send us an email if you want a question answered over the air, eyes@hawaiianeye.com. Check out our website at hawaiianeye.com or find us on Facebook, Hawaiian Eye Center. The Hawaiian Eye Show is sponsored by Hawaiian Eye Center, where life has never looked better, with offices in Waihewa, Waipahu, and in Hilo on the Big Island. Thanks for listening. Aloha.
You've been listening to The Hawaiian Eye Show, sponsored by the Hawaiian Eye Center, where life has never looked better, with Harvard-trained eye surgeon Dr. Christopher Totora. If you have an eye problem, want to get a second opinion, or aren't seeing as well as you used to, make an appointment with Dr. Totora or one of the doctors of the Hawaiian Eye Center in Central Oahu or Hilo by calling C-2020. That's 733-2020. Until next week, here's looking at you.
When you have a cataract, your vision gets gradually worse over time. You don't see as well.
Having the corrective surgery and now having the vision of a much younger man, I can see again.
Our state-of-the-art surgery center offers safety and convenience without a hospital stay. Visit our website and learn what's involved in a cataract procedure. You'll be surprised how easy it can be.
Take a virtual tour of a cataract procedure at their website, hawaiianeye.com. To make an appointment, call Hawaiian Eye Center at C-2020. That's 733-2020. Or from the neighbor islands, call 888-621-2020.
Let your voice be heard.
Well, if you care about your kids, then you better start listening. You better start doing something.
KHVH Honolulu.